Hello, welcome to your meditation practice as part of the Open Heart Project. My name is Susan Piver, and I am delighted to sit with you in meditation and share some thoughts with you about the third of the Four Noble Truths of Buddhism. And after that, we'll sit together for 10 minutes. So this is the third video in our series, Exploring Foundational Teachings of Buddhism. We started with the first noble truth, which is the very unpleasant sounding, life is suffering, which means in this case, many things, but among them, everything changes and there's nothing to hold on to. And that is very painful. The second noble truth is called the cause of suffering. Like, why is this so painful? And the second noble truth says the cause of the suffering is not that everything changes, it's that we pretend that the first noble truth is not true and try to grasp onto things that will not last, no matter how wonderful or terrible. Now we come to the third noble truth, which is called the cessation of suffering, which is quite a relief, if I may say so personally. Yeah, okay. It's hard out. It's hard. Even if you have, you know, basically a decent life like me, I got a place to live. I have food to eat. I have friends and a relationship. But still, there is incredible suffering. On bad days, it's raging grief. And on less bad days, it's confusion and all kinds of dissatisfaction with whatever. Maybe you can relate. So the third noble truth says, well, you can stop doing that. So I don't know about you, but I'm very interested in that. How do you stop doing that? So I'm happy to share some thoughts and then stay tuned for our next 8 videos. That's a lot. Each one is going to explore a different step of the fourth noble truth, a lot of numbers, which is the noble eightfold path. So there are 8 steps to take that can relieve us of suffering. And we're going to explore each one in detail. But first, let's explore a little bit the cessation of suffering. First, just to hear that, oh, it's possible to stop suffering, is like a breath of air. It feels good. And then I immediately go, well, I don't know how that's going to happen. And I have all sorts of doubts. And okay, I'm a human being. So where do we begin? Where do we begin? So here's where we do not begin. We do not begin with embracing a theory. Some Buddhist lady said I could stop suffering if I just do these various things. So please flip that switch. That does not work. So the cessation of suffering is not something you study and master. It is something that you experience in moments, precious, sweet moments of your life. So if you begin to tune into your experience, you find that there are moments of non-suffering, of relief, of clarity. And such moments are usually not related to, oh, now I see how everything works. Oh, now I see why this is happening. Rather, they're focused on things like, look at that, the quality of the light in this room. I just noticed it. Look at this flower. That may sound trite, but a flower is not trite. Or that food I ate just tasted so good. There's some immediacy of experience that is more related to the cessation of suffering than mastering a mindset. Don't take my word for that or anything, but please think about that, because we're never going to master the mindset. Or even if we do for a moment, then it will dissolve. So rather, we can look in our experience for moments of non-suffering. And when we find them, to dwell in them a little bit, not to try to hold on, but to just appreciate them. So according to the Buddhist view, the biggest obstacle in cessation of suffering is samsara, or the ordinary world that we live in that we simply do not see clearly. The Tibetan word for samsara is korwa, spelled for some reason Khorwa, and it means something like going in circles. It means I'm going to keep doing the things that don't work because I don't know what else to do, or maybe this time they will work. I'm just going to go in circles of confusion and attempts at applying solutions that have been disproven, but I'm going to keep going. I'm going to keep rambling without actually knowing quite what I'm doing. So I'm going in circles. And if you examine your experience, or if I examine mine, I'll speak for myself, I see that, yeah, I run into the same relationship problems over and over again. I make the same mistakes in my work. I encounter the same obstacles in the things I'm trying to do. I hold views of people that are incorrect and I can't let go of them. So I'm going in the circle, the Susan Piver circle, and you are going in your own circle. And that is called samsara, or korwa in Tibetan. When we look at samsara or anything, and we want to deconstruct it or anything, there are sort of three aspects to look at. Everything that we want to understand, or everything that we experience, has a ground, like the basis, a path, and a fruition. Ground, path, and fruition. So what is the ground of samsara? What is the path of korwa? What is the path of samsara? And what is the fruition that we discover in samsara? So again, in the Buddhist view, the ground is called bewilderment or confusion or not seeing things clearly. Again, in the Buddhist view, I'll probably say that 50,000 more times in this series, the wrong view is I'm the only one who matters. And in fact, if you're looking for who or what inhabits the center of the universe, I'd like to introduce you to myself, because that's how we see the world. I'm in the center, and then there's good things and bad things that happen to me, and things I want and things I don't want, and it's entirely ordinary. But that is the ground of suffering. That is the bewilderment, because that's just not true. It just isn't true that you and I are separate, and that, in fact, I am in the center of the world. And there's even bewilderment about what's going to work, what's going to make me happy. We may think, well, this relationship or this house or this amount of money, and sure, those are good things, and I hope you get all those things. But weirdly, they don't make you happy, and maybe for a moment. And we're bewildered about, why is my life the way it is? Why is my world constructed the way it is? It seems like circumstance, or partially my doing, or partially happenstance, but I don't really know, is the point. I don't know. I don't know if there's a heaven. I don't know if there's a hell. I don't know if the things I am doing to make my life better, happier, healthier are going to work. I don't know why certain things succeed and other things fail. I don't. And my guess is that you don't either. There's a constant sense of bewilderment, which leads to the path that we then go down that's rooted in the ground of bewilderment. And it's called fixation. Like, you know what? I don't know. I don't know why this, I don't know why that, but that's very uncomfortable. So I'm going to make up something that is true. This is why that happened. This is why I feel this way. This is why you said that. This is why this project worked and that one failed. This is why the world has these problems and not those problems. And, you know, okay, maybe there's some truth into what in what you have discovered, but we stop there and actually don't really know. But we fixate on certain things in order to make ourselves feel less So pain. I'm doing it right now. I'm pretty sure. I mean, we do it all the time. So I fixate on things that I actually don't know are true. They're opinions or judgments. And I'm entitled to them, as are you, but they may not be the whole truth. In fact, I'm pretty sure they aren't. And then the result, the fruition, is suffering, is confusion and dissatisfaction and worse. So bewilderment, fixation, suffering. That's unpacking the obstacle of samsara, which stands between us and liberation from suffering. So that's the obstacle that we could work with through various means. But, and I'm going to describe one of them in a moment. And some things we can do in the meantime, while we're still trapped in samsara, at least speaking for myself, where we can begin to sort of sense the edges and therefore the exits from samsara. And of course, this is a lifelong journey. So this morning, this very morning, I am in Austin, Texas, which is very lucky for me because I really like it here. And I love to go swimming. And when, in fact, when I'm here, I go swimming every day, sometimes more than once a day. And I go swimming in a very cold and beautiful pool called Barton Springs, which is spring-fed, and it's 3 acres of pool. And it's just a magical place. If you ever get a chance to go there, you should. This morning it was like 50 degrees, but I like to go anyway. So anyway, that's not the point of the story. So I'm getting in the water, which is always around 67 or 68 degrees, and it's cold. And I'm swimming. And I'm breathing and I'm appreciating where I am, basically, until I think, wait a minute, everyone I know is gonna die. Everyone. And then I started sort of checking them off in my mind. My brother, my sister, my husband, his sister, his brother. Yeah. They're all, it's, wait, I can't imagine that. Oh, I'm gonna die too. That's not as hard for some reason, or yeah, but it's scary, but I just kept feeling all the loss that is in my future. And getting scared. And I think I was crying, although when you're crying in water, it's sometimes hard to tell. How can this be? This be? Samsara is real. It's all going away. And then as I was thinking all these thoughts, I inhaled a little bit of water. And as I inhaled a little bit of water, and I was fine, I just coughed and it was fine. I was like, okay, well, now what do I do? How do I fix this? How do I get out of this? How do I be okay with this? That's impossible. A little bit of water, there was the answer. I don't know. All I can do is focus on what's happening right now. Right now, right now. Because if I try to make sense with through mentation, through my very flawed thinking processes, I'm going to end up in a different fixation, in a different bewilderment, where I think I have some opinion about how to be okay with the fact that nothing is okay. What can you do? No, nothing. Just focus on now. What are you doing now? And that little bit of water in my lungs was a reminder to me, don't start at the end where you want to be free from suffering. Start here. Start here. Investigate what is happening right now and try not to inhale water. So that's one thought. Don't inhale water, of course, but yes, bring your attention to these huge issues that are beyond understanding. But mainly focus on what you're doing right now. Right now, right now. Because according to all the wisdom traditions of the world, right now is where all the answers lie, not up here. So, because of this, The path to cessation of suffering is rooted in what we are fixing to do, which is called the practice of sitting meditation. Because in our non-meditating life, at least speaking for myself, I'm bouncing around between this idea and that opinion and this effort and that failure and this success. And I'm thinking, oh, well, that means this and this means that. But in meditation, we put all that down. We don't get rid of it because how are you going to do that? But we start to see it because we're sitting here, tension on breath as best we can. And as that happens, our mind continues to move. This is because of that. That's because of this. What if I try this? I shouldn't have said that. All your thoughts keep happening. All your fixations keep happening. But instead of getting carried away by them downstream, to really stretch the water metaphors, you see them. You get out of the water and you sit on the banks and you watch this whole thing flowing. You watch the experience of what in this context is called fixation, aka thinking. And so that is not like, stop that. That doesn't work. But once you start to see, oh, this is what's happening, now you have some options. Now you have some agency. And now you've learned something. You've seen beyond the veneer of fixation to see perhaps that it's all just thinking. And some of the thoughts are really good. I don't mean to say otherwise. But you cultivate awareness of your inner experience. And when it comes to the cessation of suffering, this is something that I posit to you, not having attained cessation of suffering. So, what is the ground path and fruition of the cessation of suffering? Because we looked at the ground path and fruition of the creation of suffering, bewilderment, fixation. The fruition is suffering. When it comes to cessation of suffering, I posit to you that the ground is awareness. This very awareness that we bring to our experience, to our being, to our thoughts, to our breath as we meditate, that's the ground. That's where we start. Interestingly, the path is also awareness. Awareness starts to expand, not because you're going, hey, would you please expand, but because it just does. Everyone who's meditated for longer than, a week knows that you just start to have more insight. Your sense perceptions become more vivid. Awareness expands, and that is the path towards the cessation of suffering. Now, what is the fruition of the cessation of suffering? Again, I posit not having attained it. So it's very important that you take this with a grain of salt. But I would say that what does the cessation of suffering look like? What is the fruition? It too is awareness. The ground is awareness, the path is awareness, the fruition is awareness itself. All the anecdotes and stories that one could read about liberation from suffering seem to have some shared component that says the only thing that exists is awareness. There is nothing outside of it. You are pure awareness. In fact, there is no you, and there is no pure, and there is no awareness. There's just something beyond description. Okay. Let's consider that that might be so and keep meditating because that is the ground and the path and the fruition. In the meantime, in your post-meditation life, meaning when you're not sitting on the cushion, you can try another way of cultivating the inner state of liberation from suffering, which sounds very prosaic, but it is not. Because usually, where we look for, oh, how can I stop suffering? Well, I need to work on this mental state or this emotional issue or this view. If only I could have the right view, I could be liberated. Okay, good. But we can actually draw in the experience of relief from suffering from our world rather than from between our ears. So the way to begin to experiment with that, again, sounds kind of prosaic, but attend to the details of your life. Not to be a perfect goody-goody who has an empty inbox and nothing on the to-do list, but to care about the things in your environment, to care about your body, what you put in it, not to be a health nut or anything like that, but to enjoy what you eat, what you put on your body. Do I like these clothes? Are they clean? Just that very simple and very important level of awareness. How about my room? Did I put things away? Did I wipe this off after I spilled it? Again, I'm not trying to tell us that we should be prissy, but when we start to attend to the environment with some kind of precision, our inner state begins to mirror that proclivity for precision. So it's a two-way street. So to sum up, cessation of suffering, the biggest obstacle is samsara, three parts of samsara, ground, path, fruition, bewilderment, fixation, suffering. You could train yourself to attend to right now rather than trying to figure out what cessation of suffering is, because it's actually right here, not up here. You could have a steady meditation practice to the best of your ability. Everybody has different possibilities in their life, but we're practicing the cessation of suffering when we sit with our experience as it is without trying to manipulate it. Or when we do try to manipulate it to see that counts, that's cool. And then to establish an invitation to the precision of mind that will eventually reveal the truth of how to stop suffering through presence by creating an environment that echoes that precision in the way we care for ourselves and our world. Don't take my word for that or anything. See what you think. And I'm always interested to hear. So thank you, and let's sit. So you could begin by taking an inhale and an exhale. Just let go. Sit up straight, not stiff, but with a sense of elegance. The hands rest on the legs, palms down. This is actually a mudra. It's called resting the mind mudra, and that's what we're wanting here, is resting our mind. So the hands don't have to work, or we can just rest. Let the front body relax. The belly can soften. Let the shoulders relax. The mouth is closed. The lips and teeth can be slightly parted. And just let all the muscles of speech relax. The tongue, the jaw, the throat. And the inclination to speak can also relax because you don't need it right now. You can fall silent. The breath is natural in and out through the nose, meaning there's no technique for breathing, just breathing is good. So breathing in and out through the nose, unless you have a cold or allergies, but otherwise, nose breathing. The eyes are open and the gaze is cast down to a comfortable spot in front. Given the distance of your screen, just somewhere in front and down. And let the eyes be soft. And there's a sense of seeing, you're seeing, but you're not looking. It's just seeing, vision streaming forth from the eyes. And if you're visually impaired, you can do this through the ears. There's just hearing, but you're not listening for anything in particular. Just hearing, seeing. Let the brow relax. Let your attention come to rest on the breath, which means to feel the breath rather than observe it. Feel the inhale. Feel the exhale. And again, stay with the breath as best you can. Breathing in, breathing out. The gentle rhythm of the body breathing. Your mind will continue to make thoughts, no problem. Like your eyes continue to see, your ears continue to hear, there's no off switch, particularly for thinking. So don't try to find one. Just let your thoughts be as they are. One by one, they all float through or careen through or stomp through. But imagine that your thoughts are like clouds in the sky. One by one, they do all float through. And the sky remains the sky. And in this practice, we identify with the sky, not the clouds. So thoughts come and go. If you notice that you have become absorbed in thought, like completely absorbed, not a thought, but a line of thought. You forgot about your breath. Okay. Notice that. Label that silently thinking. Oh, I was thinking. Let go. Gently come back to this breath and begin again. And the amount of times that you are allowed to come back and begin again is infinite. So you can relax. And we'll sit together for a few minutes in silence until you hear the bell. Thank you so much for your practice. Thank you for practicing with me. And thank you for practicing with the Open Heart Project. And may your practice benefit all beings, especially you.